When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The cod piece was all me.
That's what they all say, Paul.
If you could only watch three wrestling matches, what would they be and why? This is what I'm asking some of wrestling's best. In the ring, outside the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me once again on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps. It's Paul London!
Surprise!
From Off of the Wrestling!
That's
Paul
it.
London!
Hey, pleasure.
Welcome. How are we, sir?
I'm doing well. You know, I try to circle the calendar on when it's the best weather to come out here.
It is officially never the best weather to come to. As much as I adore living in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, there is never the best weather in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. You are well-travelled. That is without question.
Does that mean I'm old?
I know. I think if you're old, you're named one of the all-time greats by Vince McMahon. That's normally the bellwether whether you're old or not.
Well, if it's a compliment from Vince, then I certainly didn't get it.
Oh, well, yeah. More on that later as well. For a man that's well-travelled, question for you. Best food in the worst place and the worst food in the best place?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Let's hit him right upside the head with some tough questions.
Straight amongst it. Like, you must have eaten some great food somewhere.
Absolutely. I would say the best food that I've had was in Peru, just because the ceviche there is as fresh as you can find it anywhere. And I think anytime I go anywhere, I really try to test the local, food, the culture, the women. And ceviche is phenomenal. I grew up half in Mexico and half in Texas because I'm half Mexican. And so my family's all along the coast in Puerto Vallarta, and my uncle used to make ceviche. And so at the time, that was the best that I'd ever had. But then I went to Peru, and it was just phenomenal. It's just such a beautiful country. And so I really love it, even though I think you said the best food in the worst place.
Yeah, I don't know whether you've had an encounter where you've been somewhere beautiful and gone, this asparagus is disgusting, or worse to that effect.
Well, surprisingly, I'm really fond of Carlisle. I spent a lot of time there as well, and there's this Thai food truck. It's like a Thai food van. And that was actually surprisingly some of the best Thai food I've had.
Oh,
and
wow.
I love Carlisle, so I can't. That's still not answering your question.
You know what? I reckon it's a slightly loaded question. I think we've gone best foods and best places. I don't want to affect any potential bookings in Carlisle, because Carlisle's a cracking place.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I absolutely do not want to affect that at all. But Thai food and sriracha and ceviche. That was it.
In
sorry.
Peru, yeah, no. And as far as the worst food,
yeah, go on.
I would say there was a time when I was doing these drives from San Antonio up to Philadelphia for Ring of Honor early on. Those were 60-hour round trips, so about 30 hours up and 30 hours back in a weekend.
Jeez.
And I was still going to uni at the time, and we stopped at a Chinese buffet in Tennessee, and that was – everyone got sick.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so you take six guys, and they're all sick in a big van. And we're having to stop every few hours just to unload. So it was I do not recommend
unload.
I'm telling you, it's like going to a place where there's no ocean and asking for the seafood. if you're in Tennessee and you're looking for Chinese food, you should leave town. So it was horrible.
If you've come here for food chat, then unfortunately the food chat ends here. I apologize. We are sending you on a metaphorical desert island. The
Love
intrepid
it.
Traveler is off to a desert island. But we are going to burn onto a DVD for you three of your all-time favorite wrestling matches to watch.
Oh, my gosh.
To keep you entertained whilst you are there.
Oh, so that's phenomenal.
We are going to ask you as we go along for what those three matches are. So what would be your first wrestling match that you would put on the DVD?
Well, I'm you know, I've been hit in the head so many times that dates tend to go by me. But something that the first match that truly opened my eyes in terms of saying, like, now this is professional wrestling was, I guess, the series. So I'm kind of cheating by saying one match, but the series between Tiger Mask and Dynamite Kid, Tom Billington. That was the first time I ever truly saw what I believed to be real, even though I knew, I was like, okay, this is pro wrestling and whatnot, but those matches and the technique, I mean, they're still to this day ahead of its time, you know, to see those matches with Dynamite and Tiger Mask. Just the speed, the precision, the technique, and the impact they're hitting, you know. I mean, they're flying out, Dynamite's flying out, landing in the guardrails. I mean, it's just, I would recommend that to anyone who's watching pro wrestling to do their history and to really study these matches because they're phenomenal. We were talking on the train earlier about, you know, Kobashi and Misawa, and those were phenomenal as well. But I think, you know, in guys relative to my size, that's something that really hit home with me was, you know, because I think Tom Billington isn't that tall. And I don't know how big Sayama was, but just phenomenal stuff. You know, even just the around the worlds that Tiger Mask would do were so lightning quick. But just the impact that they hit with and the believability, you know. So you really lose yourself in any of their matches. And so I'm sitting here kind of embarrassed because I should have a specific date of one.
There was so many of them.
And I'm cheating, right? Because now I'm like, okay, you can put like 10 of these matches on a DVD and they still count as one.
In that case, the customs at Cultaholic Island will pick one at random.
Terrific.
But if they're all great, then it's
I think so.
How old would you have been when you first saw it?
I might have been probably 21, so I was probably about a year or two in, because I started about 19.
Describe what you were doing when you watched it. So paint us a picture of where you were when you were sat watching Billington blow your mind.
I was naked.
Excellent.
And I was sitting on my bed.
The best wrestling is observed naked.
Yeah, and I had some petroleum jelly. Boy, I'm trying to remember because those I got off of these relics called VHS tapes.
That's it, because we haven't got we wouldn't have had the network back in our day.
No,
wouldn't have had that. You know, it would have been tape trading and all that stuff.
Yes,
to come across a match like that from Japan would have been. Very rare and probably quite difficult.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, that was the advantage, I think, early on. I was very fortunate to be a part of Ring of Honor from its inception. I was actually supposed to be on the very first Ring of Honor show, and then my car blew up, and so I was unable to make that.
Is that
trip.
Why you weren't there?
Yeah, on the very first one. That's why all the shows from then on, I was on those, but I was supposed to be part of the Shawn Michaels school invasion or, you know, however that was painted. But, yeah, and so just my connection, you know, they had the backing with RF Video, and so we kind of had, I wouldn't say our pick of the litter, but, you know, we got our tapes faster,
yeah.
I think, than the average Joe. And I think it might have been Rudy Boy Gonzalez who kind of put the bug in my ear to check some of these matches out. And so I got the tape, and I put it in, and I must have watched it 9 or 10 times back to back, just watching this over and over again. Of course, you know, you're rewinding every 5 seconds just to make sure you saw what you saw, what you think you saw, and you did, and you're blown away by it. But it was really, it was just the impact that they were hitting with and the reactions from Dynamite in particular, where he just looked like, man, he's got his hands full, you know, and to me, they were just flawless matches. They were just flawless because, you know, I had grown up with WWF, and I did watch WCW quite a bit, but I did gravitate towards WWF more often than not. And that, it was so character-driven back then, you know, especially growing up. I guess this would have been late 90s, but I started watching wrestling, I would say, in 92.
Okay.
I stumbled upon a magazine at the grocery store that was covering the Royal Rumble when Hogan won it, and that's what brought me into wrestling originally. It was magazines. It wasn't stumbling upon it on a TV. It was watching it in pictorial form. And so when I saw this glossy, dried nacho cheese body Hogan guy on the cover clutching this American flag, and you know, I'm no like hyper patriot or anything, but I just thought, like, what is this? You know, I started flipping through the magazine, and it had this coverage of the Royal Rumble, and I could kind of understand what the match was just in the pictures and seeing how there was a lot of guys, and then this next picture there's less guys in the ring. And I think when you're looking at something in still photo form, your imagination has to kind of connect the dots, and that's really what happened, and that's what fixated me on wrestling originally, was magazines. And you know, normally it's someone just stays up late and catches telly, you know, on the tube or something. And but no, I, you know, yeah, I love magazines. Also, are also of that era of VHS.
Yeah, that was again. If it was like you get like monthly publications, you'd have to find out who won what. You'd have to wait a month.
Totally.
Like, again, like in our day, that was what we had to do. Like the idea of having everything now, quickly now, more things now.
Right.
It was ridiculous. Like, I'd love to go back, as I'm sure you would, to tell your younger self, oh, by the way, soon you'll have access to everything. Like
sure.
That. You'd be like, you liar. I've got a whole box in my back of my mum and dad's house full of wrestling VHS tapes I'd accumulated over the years.
Yeah.
That now, like, not only do I not watch them, but there's actually no value to them anymore, unfortunately.
Oh, it's
only
sad.
With the exception of sentimental.
Right, right.
The exception is sentimental.
But you could always convert them as well, right, if
yeah,
you wanted
but,
to. I know, it loses its luster.
It's a chew on it.
The thing with the network that I think is that, you know, I think they add in all their music and everything. I mean, I don't have the network. I never have. And, you know, when I would stay at a friend's house or something that had the network and be like, oh, let's watch some old ECW, but they would put in all their own music.
Yeah,
you know, it kind of loses that
sucks.
Luster. Yeah.
To go back to what you said about picking up the magazine. And your first insight into wrestling was a highlight of the Royal Rumble in magazine
sure.
form. So that must would that I don't know whether you're of this sort of sentimental mindset, Paul, but was there something quite special about being in a Royal Rumble
yes.
later on down the road?
Yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights of my whole time there and of my career, was being a part of the Royal Rumble, because that was, you know, now there's a new pay-per-view every month. Whereas, you know, when we were back in our day, you know, four pay-per-views a year, with the exception of like a Tuesday in Texas or something like that they would kind of put together just so that Hogan could get his title back, you know, but yeah, so I think, you know, when you're, for me at least, it was like if I could, and I had been a part of a SummerSlam also, teaming with Kidman and Ray against the Dudleys in Toronto. And so to be a part of a SummerSlam, but yeah, the Royal Rumble was in particular the feather in my hat, because that was what really caught my attention initially.
And you had such a phenomenal exit from a Royal Rumble that
well,
time.
You know, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
I cringed for you, fella. I was watching live. I was like, whoa, Snitsky just broke Paul London. What'd you do that for?
It's funny because, you know, I was so pumped for that, and I wasn't expecting to eliminate a bunch of people or anybody, really.
We'll beat a Paul London.
Yeah.
Out the Undertaker.
Well, we had done it. Some cruiserweight match. I think that was like a qualifier. And so I won that. And then we were in the, you know, so I was in the Rumble, and I was just so happy to be a part of it. And I think, you know, my mind started racing with these possibilities and, you know, delusions. And so when we get to kind of setting this thing up, and not to break too many fourth walls here, but when it was, you know, like, okay, and you're being eliminated by Snitsky, nothing against Gene. I love Gene. He's a pal of mine. But I think I'm hoping to get a super kick by Sean or something, or, you know, get eliminated. And so, that kind of came out of, man, I don't know the right word for it, but it was like, okay, you want Gene to eliminate me. Well, we're going to make this the best elimination of the match.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just worked out better than I could have expected. So much, in fact, that I had heat for a good month after that. because they were under the impression that I had gone into business for myself and tried to steal the show. But that's how I was raised. That's how I was brought in. You know, I was, my first real name trainer was Ivan Putski. My journey kind of took me all over, where when I was leaving high school, all the universities that I applied to were out of Texas, because Texas was in a bit of a downturn at the time. And so all the universities I applied to, I made sure that they had wrestling schools nearby them, because that was my plan. I was like, okay, I'll go to uni and go to wrestling school on the side, and my parents won't know about it. And I did this big journey, and I ended up in Pittsburgh because I had applied to this school, the House of Hardcore 2, which was Dominic DiNucci and Shane Douglas. They were starting a second House of Hardcore. The original was in New York with Taz and, boy, his name slips me right now. But
Chris Chetty?
No, it wasn't Chetty. It was an old-timer. Johnny Rods, I think. And so I couldn't get to New York, but so I got into this school called Duquesne University. It was the only time I was ever on the dean's list also, and I'll get to that in a second. But so Shane Douglas called me on my home phone. Back in the day, we had these things called answering machines. And he left this message. And so long story short, I got into the House of Hardcore 2. I got up to Pittsburgh, and right at that time, Shane had torn his bicep, and so all the training was off. And so I got up, I got into this university to go to training, and it all kind of backfired in my face. So then I transferred to the University of Memphis, because my understanding was wrestlers just grow out of the ground in Memphis. And that was also a very down point in Memphis wrestling. It was before MCW had started, which was one of the first territories as far as developmental territories. There was Power Pro Wrestling there. But I found this guy named Outlaw Don Bass, and he wanted to train me in a trailer park in like a carpeted room with no ring. It sounds very sketchy.
Yeah. If you put that on Craigslist today, wouldn't touch that with
a barge
pole.
That's in the intimate encounters section on Craigslist. But so I'm training, and you know, he's asking for $3,000, and I thought, you know, this isn't really what I signed up for. And so I left.
I signed up for a sex dungeon.
I did.
And you're wrestling me.
I want some gimp masks, you know, the whole deal. So I left, and I went back to Austin very deterred, and I stumbled upon Ivan Putski had just opened this wrestling school, and I went the very next day and applied. And so that was really how I broke in, was through Ivan Putski. But what he had always taught us was, you know, you go out there and you give the absolute best that you can regardless of where you're on the card, and it's up to the rest of the card to pick up their game. And so going back to the Rumble, I mean, that was just kind of my idea, was whatever I'm a part of, I have to give every single thing that I possibly can. Well, they looked at it very differently. And so, you know, I got stretchered out. They did replays, you know, and all this stuff. And so when I got to the back, I remember Pat Patterson was the one person who was super high on it. And he thought, that was fantastic. That was so good. You know, he's like rubbing my shoulder. And that was amazing, phenomenal. And he's telling, you know, Shane's walking by. He's like, Shane, did you see that? Yeah. Michael Cole or Michael Hayes, did you see that? He's like, yeah, it was good. He comes up to me. He says, Michael Hayes says, yeah, it was good. It was a little too good. And he had this pissed off look on his face. And I thought, what the hell am I supposed to do here? You know, like I thought the whole deal was to help elevate everything.
It's weird. That feels like it certainly feels like nowadays that is there's a mentality a bit more like that. It feels like in some sides of the company. But there was this point, and you're not the first person to say it, where it was a case of don't be good, but don't be too good.
Absolutely.
Don't be too good. Absolutely. But then it should be like everybody should go, I'm going to blow your socks off, so then the next person has to work harder. That's how we all get better in whatever we do.
Absolutely. I mean, we should be. You know what I mean? I mean, growing up playing basketball, I didn't stay on the west side where I was, you know, surrounded by white kids. I went to the other side and got my teeth kicked in by, you know, all the street ballers. This is the only way you get better, you know, is to work and compete with guys much better than you.
Yeah, they expect you to sort of toe the line and, you know, stand to the side and smile, but you did that and you still got told off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? What can you do?
And the funny thing is like, there were a few times after that later where they wanted me to do that same bump from the Rumble, and I just said no. I mean, I turned it down because I didn't want to take anything away from that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because there's because you've done it and it's a moment, and then
and now it's, you know, every January or whatever, they always seem to play that clip or it comes back up again, you know. Yeah. I always hear about it. And so it's a real feather in my cap, you know, to at least have some bit of a mark on the Rumble. You know,
you're a part of Rumble history, which is great when you consider it a match with 30 people in to stand out that much all these years on. It is an absolute
thank you.
Your second match then for your DVD.
Yes. This one is a lot more common and more cliched, I think. I would have to go with Bret and Shawn, Iron Man, for WrestleMania 12 in Anaheim.
Shawn Michaels, the confident challenger, a maverick who spits in the face of adversity. Bret Hart, a triumph of tenacity, the mighty ring general who stands in defiance of defeat. Tonight, for one illustrious hour in the Iron Man match, we will witness their passion, applaud their heroics, marvel at their gift to enthrall. Two craftsmen engaged in an extraordinary athletic event. Two men bound by the dream. After 60 grueling minutes, one man, exhausted, will have his arm raised high, the quest realized, the challenge overcome. One man, expended, will breathe loneliness. Unwilling to surrender, he will have been stripped of the dream.
Growing up, it was very difficult for me to translate my love for wrestling in a way that people would understand. I know it's kind of weird to say, but, you know, growing up, you know, I grew up in a house full of attorneys. And so they always thought, why do you want to be a part of something where you're willingly going to get hurt? Why do you want to do this? And that was always just something that was so difficult for me to understand because, you know, obviously I'm a masochist. Shawn and Bret were the only two wrestlers that I could share with my dad that he wouldn't think, you know, that I was going the other way or something of that nature. And these were like real men, you know, that wrestled and had integrity to them. More so Bret, I think, than Shawn at the time. But these were guys that were real pure wrestlers who'd come up in the territories. And for them to go an hour plus, you know, again, it was one of those matches that I could just rewind and learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. And it was phenomenal. I mean, you know, they didn't do anything too absolutely crazy, but everything made sense. And it was just a magical buildup, you know, with the Shawn training montages and the Bret training montages up in Canada and then Shawn down in San Antonio. And I still bust Rudy Boy's balls there because he was wearing the Bumblebee tights as one of the throw guys during Shawn's training montages.
That was him, wasn't it?
He claims it wasn't, but he's full of crap.
Totally was. But it was a time when Shawn Michaels was the whole thing, the boy is becoming a man.
Absolutely.
And that was what made it feel quite unique as a build, because it was Shawn Michaels who had just been this arrogant, cocky, like immature young man for so long,
right.
And it had been and his life was turning around. He'd met Jose Lothario and he was starting to blossom into like a grown wrestler, almost like a grown
Definitely.
Man. And the thing is, a lot of people, they have mixed emotions about that match. I mean, you're the second person to mention it on this podcast. So
it's good.
But the reason is because I think a lot of people feel that for the first Iron Man match, for it to go to a 0-0 draw, it seems like, well, why did you do an Iron Man match if you weren't going to take full advantage of the premise? But it was still I think the fact that they didn't score any pins was the greatest twist of them all.
Absolutely.
Was they said, hey, you're going to, it's however many pins in an hour. These guys couldn't pin each other in an hour. They just wrestled their socks off.
They were that good.
They just wrestled for ages. There's a common misconception regarding you and Shawn Michaels, isn't
there? Sure. Yes, there is. A huge misconception. So much, in fact. The misconception is that I trained with Shawn. I was part of his academy. And the truth was is that I couldn't afford Shawn's school. It was $3,900. Yeah, $3,900. And I couldn't afford it. And so once Shawn, from what my understanding was, there was a kid in England who was over there training and had hurt himself. To the point that I think he might have been paralyzed. I'm not sure. And so there was some insurance issues with that, and Shawn quickly closed the school and handed it over to Rudy Boy. That's when I came in. I had originally came in to do a tryout, and Shawn was there, but he didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the tryout. It wasn't very good either. but that's what got me in with Rudy Boy. And so Rita Boy said, you know, come on down to the Valley. We'll put you on this weekend if you're able, and, you know, we'll see what we can do with you. And I came down, and the other guy that was supposed to come down with me no-showed, which just kind of helped me even more. And that's really what got me started with Rudy Boy. And so I did an interview years later with when I was at WWE, and they had asked me about that. And I specifically kind of broke it down as I just did. But they ran with the Sean thing and were like, oh, he's one of Sean's trainers or trainees and then this and this and this. Well, years later, when Sean was back with us at WWE, he pulled me into his locker room one time and he said, can you straighten something out for me? Because all these people keep saying that I trained you. And I was like, just so embarrassed. You know what I mean? Because I sit here thinking like, oh God, he's going to think that I was like running with this thing. And I said, no, this is what happened. And I broke it down to him and he goes, oh God, thank goodness. Because I kept thinking, God, if I trained this kid, I would have remembered him. But I couldn't remember training this kid. And I was like, no, here's what happened. And then I think I kind of felt the need to gush a little bit. And I was like, oh, I loved your book, even though I didn't quite finish Sean's book. Because it got very religious and stuff. It was weird. But in my eyes, Shawn Michaels has always been the perfect professional wrestler. I still think he has the greatest punches ever. He's been able to put a great match together with anybody, regardless of who he was in the ring with, whether he got pissed off or not during that match. Now I know where Kendrick gets his temper. When he's in the match and things don't go.
Quite grumpy?
That is an understatement.
Oh, okay.
Brian is, from the best of my knowledge, the only WWE talent to have been assigned to go to anger management.
Wow.
During developmental
Grumpy
phase.
Brian Kendrick is grumpy.
Yeah, so.
Did you ever fall afoul of Grumpy Brian Kendrick?
Many times.
Okay.
Many times. We had a match in Australia. This is probably back in 2013, and we were in Perth, and we were wrestling the promoter, which often happens, and one of his mates in a tag match. And somewhere early in the match, I mean, like the very first minute of the match, we're doing some wrestling, and Brian's on the apron screaming at us. And he's like, this sucks. This is boring. And I'm sitting here in like, all my enthusiasm was just draining out of me, and I was just getting so angry. And this is the first minute of the match. and then we get to the end of the match, and it was like some screw job where they went up. And to try and save face, you know, I get on the microphone. I'm like, we're going to come back, and we're going to get you, you know, like one of those kind of baby face. And Brian grabs the microphone out of my hands. He goes, no, we're not. We're never coming back here because these guys suck, and we'll never wrestle them again. They're the worst ever. And he's cussing, and there's, like, kids in the crowd, and I'm sitting here just so embarrassed. And then we get to the back, and he comes up to me, and he's like, hey, buddy, like, hey, you want to go outside and, you know, hang out? I'm like, no, like, I don't want to be anywhere near you. And he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, are you kidding? I mean, it was like a switch just flipped. And so we had, you know, we didn't ride together when we were up traveling on the road either. You know, I always rode by myself because I never liked being on someone else's clock. And Brian's very impatient, as I am, but, I would always go out as well and sign for pretty much every fan that wanted an autograph, because that's what you would do when you didn't have the advantage of social media to hype yourself up, you know, and I didn't have very much TV time. And so that was really my main connection with the audience, was before and after the shows, going out and just meeting them, shaking their hands and talking to them and signing autographs. And that really helped me in a lot of ways, but a lot of guys didn't want to wait 2 hours after the show had ended to do all that. So it just got to the point where I just started writing by myself. And plus, he always rode with Regal, I think, out of like a respect type deal. He always drove Regal around and stuff. And so, I mean, I love him. He's one of my best friends. He'll always be a brother to me, but we definitely butted heads a lot.
I think when you hang around with somebody that much anyway,
absolutely,
it's bound to happen.
Yes.
In terms of where you're at with wrestling now, I have read that you were backstage at Impact Wrestling.
Yes.
Recently. You were doing some work with them as a producer?
I was, yeah. I did some earlier in the year as well. In February in Vegas, they brought me out to do some producer work for them. And then just recently, a few weeks ago, and my gathering was that Lance Storm was in that position, and then he had just kind of abruptly left. And so they're like scrambling, like, oh shit, oh well, Paul's close, let's bring him in. And that was cool. I mean, it was a neat experience. It wasn't at all of the wonderful experience that I had had doing the same kind of work at Lucha Underground, which is really where I cut my teeth as a producer, in the back and stuff. But it was a good experience. I mean, I was able to kind of get a feel for the Impact, climate. And it was okay, you know.
I'm not getting the spark of enthusiasm for you in a producer's role. Because some people do gravitate towards it afterwards. But for you, is it?
Well, no. I love the position. I love doing. I am more at the point now in my career where I prefer to help than to see what I can do for myself. Yeah. You know, I don't think there's much that I need to prove to myself in terms of wrestling or accolades. I did more than I ever set out to do originally. I just wanted to get to WWE, you know, because everyone was just like, you can't do it, and you're crazy, and you're small, and you're going to get hurt. And it was just constant, no, 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 no. I think my mom and my oldest brother were the only two that were like, yeah, you can do this. And so really getting there was kind of the goal. It wasn't, you know, to get there and be on top and be champion and all this stuff. And so when those things came along, it was just, you know, icing on the cake. And so there really isn't anything that I've set out to do that I haven't done. If anything, I've done more than I originally intended. So now it really is a matter of helping others kind of connect the dots and making those light bulbs go off. And it's tough, you know, because I feel like this kind of gruff old timer where it's like, you really don't have to do all that stuff. And I'm sitting here remembering myself hearing this from the old timers, you know, saying like, what are you doing? Like, you don't have to do all this stuff. And it's like, are they crazy? Like, I got to do everything I can. And now I got to show it all. And, you know, that's where I would like to go back and tell myself, like, hey, you don't have to kill yourself so much. And you don't have to think that you have to fill in all this space. And so as I got older, I really embraced the performer aspect of it more and more, which was another real advantage to being at Lucha Underground, was that they were very much performance based in a lot of ways. Yeah. And so that was a huge help. But yeah, no, I love the opportunity to be a producer. I love doing the work in terms of helping guys make sense of their matches and really getting value out of everything that they do. I think the thing with Impact was that I never got the feeling that they were serious about bringing me on board as like a full-time thing. And so this is kind of like a hired gun for the day kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was always the vibe I got from them. And you know, they haven't called or, you know, they haven't written. So, I mean, it's...
Dear Stan.
Yeah.
I come back to the Impact Zone, but you still ain't calling, Michael.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away from wrestling, let's talk about Tiger Man.
Well, I'm the king of the jungle, they call me the Tiger Man. I'm the king of the jungle, they call me the Tiger Man. If you cross my path, you take your own life in your hands.
love the concept of an alternative reality movie.
Yes.
This might be one of my favorites.
Yes.
Please,
thank you.
Please tell us what Tiger Man's all about.
Tiger Man is a story that me and my good friend James Campbell, who's a phenomenal director, who I met in Newcastle some odd years ago when I was working with ICW. And we conceptualized this story of Elvis, you know, getting the kind of the revenge for Bruce Lee's death, kind of avenging the death of Bruce Lee. And I grew up as a martial artist. I did martial arts before I ever did wrestling. I was an actor before I ever did wrestling. And I've just recently started martial arts up again in the past few months because of Tiger Man. But the idea is basically let's really focus on Elvis's karate background and the fact that he was one of the first American black belts ever, actually, in terms of his experience. And some of the guys that he trained with were phenomenal. I mean, just Superfoot Bill Wallace was one of the greatest, is one of the greatest kickboxer martial artists ever. And, you know, I don't even know where to start. Elvis's karate is something that, again, I will find myself naked in bed watching. But so we conceptualized this idea, and James wrote this awesome script that really focuses on the karate side of Elvis and of that time area where, you know, Elvis had this comeback in about 69, because in the 60s he was making a ton of films, more so than he was putting out albums. The albums that he was putting out were usually the soundtracks to these movies that he was making, and he wasn't very happy with a lot of these movies because they were all just really commercial and they weren't very good. So he had this big comeback in about 68, 69. And then as it gets into kind of the 70s, you know, and I think Bruce died early in the 70s, you know, I think. And so the time kind of matched up, and we thought, well, this is kind of opportune to do something where, you know, we see this badass side of Elvis, you know, who isn't crooning. He isn't going around kissing a bunch of women, even though I'm trying to get that written in the script. And so let's see what he can do. And Elvis was trying to put out, they were working on a documentary called The Gladiators, which was focusing on Elvis and the Memphis Mafia and on Elvis's training. And it was this documentary that never saw the light of day because Elvis got sick and eventually passed away, supposedly.
There's a guy at the chip shop who swears he's Elvis.
I'm telling you, he's out there, man. Don't even get me started on the conspiracies. And So the thought was let's focus on Elvis's karate and do something obviously fictional that really highlights that aspect of his life in like a real fun badass kind of way, you know, because I think in terms of fiction, you know, I think we kind of just have what Bubba Hotep in terms of stuff that, you know, maybe happened, maybe didn't.
The idea of because when I looked into it, the idea of an Elvis Presley karate movie.
Right.
And then when you said, oh, we came up with the idea in Newcastle, genuinely, and I say this not in a derogatory way because I love the idea, were you in the pub at this point?
No.
Because, like, like most of my evenings end in similar conversations. we conceived one night, me and my brothers, Jeff Capes, the shot putter, being a Spider-Man villain. And I just wondered whether it come from that. But if it's obviously it hasn't. It's a well thought out idea.
We were actually walking around Carlisle.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's the voice of James Campbell.
That's right.
No, don't be sorry. Voice of James Campbell.
We were wandering around Carlisle and just started talking about Elvis, and then we went back to your hotel room watching footage.
Yes.
And then I left on the train to go back to Newcastle, and I'd said, right, leave it with me. I'm going to write something.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And
you did it.
Yeah. And I mean, Elvis referred to himself as Tiger Man. He wore a tiger necklace and emblem kind of thing. And, you know, he had learned karate in Germany when he was over there in the army in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s. And so he was a badass. He was a badass. If you see some of this stuff on YouTube of him doing karate, I mean, it's it's obviously not going to look like Bruce Lee's martial arts, but nobody was like Bruce, you know?
No, he was one of a kind.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just so fun. It's so fun to explore that whole world of what might have been, you know? And
so where are we at with the film, and what can people do to help bring this to life?
They can buy the whole thing. They can give us $1 million.
There you go.
And we'll have this thing done in a few short months, and they'll never regret it. Well, I think part of the function today, which is at the Majestic Theater tonight, we're going to try and raise some more funds, and then we're going to start. Right now, we're working on a conceptualized trailer so that we can take that to a couple markets and start selling that as well. We've already got quite a bit of interest from several people back in California. And the idea is to create a feature and hopefully kind of build a bit of a franchise with this thing, you know, and just kind of explore it. You know, there have been some slight touches from other projects where they talk about him as a secret agent and things of that nature, you know, because he met with Nixon. You know, I don't know if you've heard of that whole thing, but he went out of his way to do a covert kind of operation. He went and met Nixon at the White House and wanted to become a secret agent at large, because Elvis collected badges. You know, he was a police officer in Palm Springs. He was a police officer in Memphis. He had, like, actual badges.
Wow.
And so he collected this stuff and was really prideful of that. And his idea was that if he was a secret agent at large, which he kept mentioning at large, even though I don't think that position even existed, his idea was that he could go in. Everyone trusted him and everyone loved him, no matter if they were white, black, Asian. And so his idea was that he could kind of infiltrate and go undercover and find out where the drugs were coming from that was messing up kids' minds, you know, in America, and kind of twisting their minds up a bit. Not that he blamed the Beatles too much for that drug culture.
That episode should end with a fight with the Beatles.
That's a hell of an idea.
There you go.
Yeah, 4-on-1. You know, I'm ready for it. So
it's the end of you, Elvis. It'd be amazing. But the concept then would be, obviously, Tiger Man would be Elvis the Kung Fu years.
Yes.
You could do Elvis the police years.
Sure.
You could do Elvis the astronaut years. Or other things I say that he did.
Yes. Yeah.
Other like jobs that he did.
Sure.
As well as being a singer.
Absolutely.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
I mean, it definitely makes me look back at honky tonk matches much differently. Do you know what I mean? Where I'm like, come on. Like, I want to see a little bit more action. Come on, honky.
I'm making notes here.
Yeah.
But I, because I presume you're playing Elvis.
Yes.
Of course you are.
Which is a bit daunting, you know, but I think... if we were doing like an actual biopic, then it would be a lot more daunting. But in the sense that we're having fun, but also focusing on the karate aspect of it, I'm just ready to kick ass, man. TCB, baby.
Incredible.
TCB.
Incredible. Where can people go to find out about Tiger Man? We'll remind them again at the end of the podcast, but let's drop it in here as well.
Well, they can find it on our social media. If they look me up, I'm at London Foo, and they can find James Campbell as well on social media. What's your handle again? It's just...
Mine's JamCam80s.
That's right. JamCam80s.
You just search Tiger Man.
Yeah.
Tiger
Man. Not at all. And we've been hyping it up for the past few months, and so it's only going to get bigger, and we're only going to keep kicking tail, man, taking names.
Amazing. We've got one more match for
yes.
your DVD to get to. Before we get to it, as well as taking three wrestling matches onto a DVD,
yes.
you're allowed to take a movie, an album, and a luxury item.
Oh, my God.
So I know...
I feel like I'm on a game show.
I know, right? And a brand new car.
I need one.
A speedboat. So in terms of a movie,
wow,
one movie that you can watch whilst you're on the desert island if you get bored of watching the wrestling, what movie do you want to watch, Paul?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you probably won't be able to find it, so I'll save this film and I'll do a backup. But there's a movie called The Last Movie, and it was done by Dennis Hopper back after Easy Rider, and... He was kind of out of his mind when he did this film, because with the success of Easy Rider, the studio kind of gave him carte blanche and said, here you go, go make something. And he took all this money and went down to Peru and flew in a bunch of his friends and everything. I think this was Chris Christopherson's acting debut as well. And he did the soundtrack. But this movie is called The Last Movie. And just to give you an idea, the edited version, the version that Dennis Hopper wanted to put out was 40 hours long. And the studio thought, you are out of your mind. How much is that white snow down in Peru affecting you guys?
That's half of Lord of the Rings. It's
insane. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But when Dennis Hopper lived in Taos, he bought this old movie theater where he would go and edit this picture on his off time, and then he would play movies for kids in the town on weekends and stuff like that. But this was his pet project, and it never really saw the light of day. I saw about a two-hour version of this film last year at the Egyptian in L.A., and it was awesome. It was awesome. But it's one of those lost gems that just kind of got swept under the rug, and that kind of blackballed him from Hollywood for a little while because they just thought he's out of his mind.
Because he was so eccentric.
And oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But in terms of films that are attainable, man, that's extremely tough because I have a bunch of the ones that I already really relish. But in terms of a film that, man, that's a...
Well, what if we go to the cabin in the woods and get you the 40-hour version of The Last Movie?
I mean, that would just be...
I mean, you could be on the island for a while. So.
I would welcome it. I would welcome being on an island anytime. Yeah, I mean, that's just one of those rare gems that's just so hard to find. But, you know, in terms of, like, martial arts films, you know, I already own King of the Kickboxers. I already own No Treat, No Surrender 2 and 3. You know, these are all gems that, you know, really speak to me as well. Maybe a clean version of China O'Brien would be
okay.
A nice, you know, a big Cynthia Rothrock fan as well. Keith Cook, Ken Norton. Can't
nice.
Go wrong, man.
Nice. What about an album then?
An album? Wow. Man, I own a bunch of those as well already.
A soundtrack to your time on the island. So happily listen to.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe during the interval of the 40 hours of the last movie.
Maybe anything by Camel. There's a band called Camel, an old UK band,
okay.
An old prog rock band that came up around the same time as Pink Floyd. And the emergence of Pink Floyd kind of oversaw the brilliance of Camel. Snow Goose, the Snow Goose excerpts, I think, is one of their best albums.
Okay.
I know I'm throwing some stuff out here. You're just like, what in the hell is he talking about? Yeah, but Camel is phenomenal. Easily one of the greatest bands to ever come out of the UK.
Wow, so, that's a big statement.
Yeah.
So what is it about Camel? That obviously, because they came at the same time as so many other prog rock bands, but what is it about Camel that comes through for you?
You know, I actually think they do have a song about Gandalf, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's called The White Wizard. It's one of those songs that you don't need drugs to trip out. It's one of those bands that just, the psychedelia in their music, it's just really... It takes you to another galaxy. I mean, it really does. It has such a cosmic feel to it, and it's wholesome too. It's not, you know, they're not talking about anything destructive or anything of that, you know. But they're just, I mean, you literally feel like you're on a roller coaster listening to this music. Of course, there's a kaleidoscope of colors and all those sorts of stuff. It's just beautiful. I would recommend it to anybody who's needing some great real music that isn't just steeped in samples and auto-tune and all sorts of crap that you get today, you know what I mean? So,
okay.
Yeah.
And a luxury item.
Oh,
so this can be anything.
Oh,
this can be something that you can just bring from home that would make you feel better. It could be... some people have cheated and asked for a satellite mobile phone and a boat. But some people have booked the system like that. I'll give you some examples. Nick Aldis was on this show and he's taking his Ferrari. Oh, his Jaguar, sorry, his Jaguar. He's taking his car. I don't know. Colt Cabana is taking a B-day. Wants a clean ass while he's on the island, which is fair enough. Mike Quackenbush is bringing one of his nice suits. He doesn't know when he'll need it, but he just quite likes looking at it.
Yeah,
it's a bit like some of his suits are a bit like a magic eye picture. Quite impressive. So, how about yourself? So, what would you bring?
Wow, I would probably have to go with a crystal coffin.
Wowzers.
Yeah, so that I could sleep in it, but still look out and see who's approaching me. Do you know what I mean?
In case but it's help.
Yeah, it's a real, I think it's a comfortable thing to lay in, you know, but if you had something that was a crystal coffin, I think that's pretty regal.
Lying in a crystal coffin, listening to Camel.
Oh, man.
There you go.
I mean, can you imagine? But if you can't find that, then I'll go with a nice a silver necklace, a TCB necklace with the lightning bolt through it. You know, that was what Elvis handed out to every member of the Memphis Mafia. They all had this emblem TCB for taking care of business, and it had a lightning bolt through it, and that meant you were in, you were part of the game.
Wow, okay.
You know what I mean? So. And if you can't find that, then I would say as close to a replica of Elvis's karate gi, his customized karate gi, which was just this very, very fancy white with red.
Just similar to the thing you wore in Lucha Underground.
That was inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very much inspired by Elvis and Freddie Mercury and some Mick Jagger in there as well. But the cod piece was all me.
That's what they all say, Paul.
Your final match for your DVD to take onto the island. What are we going with?
You know, a lot of people might be a bit pissed at this because they may not agree. And it's extremely current. It's an extremely current match, which I just recently watched. Now, I don't watch so much wrestling anymore. Except when I am at someone's house or they're, you know, checking something out. But there was a match on NXT a few weeks ago between Adam Cole and Matt Riddle, which I thought was absolutely phenomenal.
Wow.
I thought it was incredible.
This is how you kick off a show with the NXT Championship being defended off the jump. And Riddle jumped right into an in-ring career after beginning a combat sports career as a mixed martial artist. This is what it's all about, the most prestigious title in NXT. And immediately, Riddle with the takedown on the champion.
It was one of the best matches I think I had seen, I mean, in memory. And I kept saying that. I was like, this is one of the best matches I've seen in so long. And I think Adam Cole has that same quality that Sean does, where he can have a great match with just about anybody. But I think also Matt Riddle is such a unique talent that anything that he's a part of is going to have just such a unique feel to it. You know, I mean, they're just such amazing talents, you know, and I think they're both great guys. But their chemistry together was, I don't know why I was surprised, because I know that they're so great, but it was just a joy to watch. And when you can hook me with a few of your falsies, when you can hook me and I'm just like, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I want. That's what I want in every match that I see. But that match, just, I was so happy for those guys. You know what I mean? Because it was just a real joy to watch. So
it felt like it was a special night that night for that whole brand, all those people there.
Absolutely.
How did you come to watch it? Because you say you don't really watch wrestling so much anymore.
Yeah,
how did
that sort of fall into
the radar?
A buddy of mine I think that one was on national TV. I think they're on like USA or something right now. So we caught a replay of it, and that was really kind of the only match I wanted to see. The women's match earlier in the night also was really pretty spectacular as well. I think it was
Shayna Baszler, Candice, and
yeah, and I'm really happy for Candice. I think she's one of the most underrated talents in the world. I mean, female wise, but just talent wise as well. You know, I'd spent a lot of time with Candice earlier. I think 2012, around that time. So I got to see how talented she was. And so as she started to emerge and is emerging, but when she got signed and everything, I was just so happy for her, because I think she's a great person. And I think she still has a ton to show people. And I think she's really going to open some eyes and inspire girls. You know, I think the way that women's wrestling is now, it's at such a peak, and it's still peaking. I mean, it's just going more and more and more. But I think when you take someone like Candice, who doesn't sell the body aspect of it, you know what I mean? And she's a beautiful person. But her ability and her talent is what really stands out. You know, she doesn't have to wear skimpy outfits or anything like that, you know. And I think that that's very healthy for, especially for young girls coming up, you know what I mean? Especially when we're in such like a body conscious climate now, you know.
I mean, when you were in WWE, it was still very much the divas division.
They wanted me to get fake tits. I mean, can you imagine? it was
I mean,
just so
rocked them. Don't get me wrong. But if you know, it's, you do what you do. But it's to be in that time when women's wrestling was sort of, and it was kind of like the toilet break matches, and there was nothing really to
right.
them, to go from that to now, where you know it is not out of place for the women's championship to go on last.
Right.
Because it's like, well, you're going to put the best wrestlers on last, the best feud on last, that should go on last.
That's
and
huge.
Now it's an incredible time.
No, it's huge. I mean, when I was there, we watched the women's matches, you know, just to see where the big mistakes would happen. You know what I mean? And it sucks because they were all really nice girls and stuff, but it certainly didn't have the platform it does today.
You talk about a few people that you've obviously been down the road with in NXT. Is there anybody that you've seen currently wrestling who you would love to wrestle now? Somebody who is maybe on the up and up, or you think, I want to mix it up with them. I think we could work some magic together.
Oh, there's a ton. I mean, I think Velveteen Dream is somebody who just embodies so many different legendary personalities. I mean, he very much reminds me a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Randy Savage stuff in him. There's a lot of, there's some Rick Rude stuff. There's some Shawn Michaels stuff in him. I mean, I think Velveteen Dream is somebody who's very unique and has a ton of, I mean, it's just like the sky's the limit for him, you know what I mean? I've wrestled Roddy a handful of times, Roderick Strong, and I think he's amazing. I would always welcome a match with him anytime. I've never had the chance to wrestle with Adam Cole. I think that would be great. Same with, I did a tour with Bobby Fish in Japan for Noah a few years back. I think Kyle O'Reilly is one of the great. I mean, I'm just naming the whole Undisputed Era.
Basically, you're trying to get to the Undisputed Era.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, guys, if you're listening,
you've named everybody.
You know what I mean? But I think, yeah, Matt Riddle would be a guy who I would love to work with. You know, because like growing up as a Texan, you know, how could you not love the Von Erichs? You know, and so when I think of like barefoot wrestlers, you know what I mean? I think of like Kevin Von Erich, you know, who was really kind of one of the last guys to really be barefoot throughout his whole career. And you think back to the rings of that era and you think like, how is he not in a wheelchair? Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? But he's living his life up in Hawaii and he's having a great time and he's got a beautiful family and his kids are awesome. You know what I mean? They're great dudes. So Matt Riddle would be a guy who, and that whole barefoot thing, I mean, it's just like, I mean, I've done shows where, you know, they let fans in the ring at intermission and whatnot. And to see them even try and get in the ring is kind of jarring because you're just hoping they don't hurt themselves just stepping into the ring. So when you think of somebody doing this barefoot and the things that they're doing barefoot, I don't think people grasp how difficult that is, like how absolutely difficult that is and how taxing that is on your body. He's definitely one that I think is great. I had matches with Tommy End at ICW, who I think is Aleister Black, but
yeah.
He's not at NXT anymore.
No, he's right? not. But he was there. He was one of the lads.
I mean, what an awesome guy! Awesome guy, phenomenal talent as well.
When you went through the match with Aleister Black, I asked this because I watched the Progress documentary where he's talking through his match with, I can't remember who he's talking through his match with, but they're having a match and he's talking at 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, and then you do that, then you do that, then I'll do
yes.
that. Does he do that?
Yes.
Did he do that with you?
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then
I was quite taken aback by
it. Why does you think that you have a great idea to like come at him with? Then he'll agree and he'll add on like three times that onto it. She's like, oh man, like I just racked my brain trying to like understand what I just came up with. And now he's like tripling that. And it's like, oh yeah, got it. You know what I mean? And so, but him and Dante, you know, when Kendrick and I wrestled them, with the Sumerian Death Squad, right? I mean, we had just, and that was the first time I met Matthew, I think, was in Newcastle at that, when we worked with them. At that show. And so, just some of my happiest times in wrestling, you know, was that whole time working with ICW and touring around with those guys.
Well, here's to many more happy times.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah, man. I mean, it's You know,
you're only a young man still.
I love you, man. You're a young man still. A kind gent.
Yeah. I only say that because I'm only about a year or two behind you, so I have to say that for my own mental well-being as well. You've been an absolute honor and a privilege to talk to you, Paul.
Thank you. Same here.
I want this to be your floor. Tell people about Tiger Man again. I want everybody to go to the right places to get fully behind this incredible film.
Absolutely. I mean, if they Google Tiger Man, like James was saying, you know, all the goods will pop up. We're probably going to put out a campaign soon enough again where they can really contribute, and then we can start really heading towards that feature presentation that we're all really yearning for. And before you know it, man, we'll be kicking and punching right in your TV screen, right on the movie screen, and TCB, baby, TCB.
Anything else you wanna take care of business? any other plugs?
Well, I had a kebab shop last night, so I'm feeling pretty good last night. That's a staple whenever I come over here, is hit up
You went for a kebab and did you have a drink last night?
No, well? I mean, well, if you count soda, you know what I mean? I haven't had any drinks yet. I have a feeling that might change tonight.
I was going to say, yeah. But normally a kebab is after drinks, which is
that's
why.
That's true.
Normally it's when you go, oh, do you know what? That's all I want to eat now. And then you wake up the next day and go, why did I eat that?
It's so true. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Preston as well. So going up and down that bar scene there was, I think I'm still a bit hungover from those times. But no, I mean, we got some fight rehearsal stuff tomorrow with a really awesome fight team. Coming up from London, Jean-Paul Lee, and so I'm not sure I'll be having too many drinks tonight.
Maybe after the fights.
Yeah, I don't want to embarrass myself more than I already will with these guys tomorrow, and take a few hits to the face. But hey, that's all part of it, man. It's not ballet.
That's all the fun.
So look up Tiger Man. Thank you, guys, and
big
hug and
handshake to
everyone. Oh man, yeah, brother, put it there, brother.
Brother, 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 brother.
That's right, yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.